Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now several months into the Trump administration, and activists have scored some important victories in those months. Yet there's always more to be done, and for many people, the question of where to focus and how to help remains. In this series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I'm Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Yeah, my name is Sarah Bramerschley, and I am a member in If Not Now, a movement to end the American Jewish community's support for the occupation of Palestine.
So this weekend, If Not Now had, I think, several actions aimed at responding to the Trump administration's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. So can you tell us, first of all, how the actions went?
Yeah, the actions were great. They were very powerful. We had actions in Boston, Washington, D.C., New York City, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, Minnesota, Chicago, I'm not forgetting any. And this was, our movement was really prepared to take action on this. And what we saw in a matter of about 24 hours, cities all across the country stood up to say, hey, we do not support this move. And this is a dangerous move for Palestinians and Israelis. And as American Jews, we need to be on the forefront of opposing this, and we're refusing to be political pawns for Trump's horrible foreign policy decisions.
Talk a little bit of background on this. You said that you were prepared as an organization for this to happen. So give people who may not follow this issue that closely some background on why this might have been coming, why and how this administration decided to do this, and why it's such a bad idea.
So this is a really wonky issue.
Yeah.
So in 1995, Congress passed a bill that was written by APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, that said that the U.S. Embassy would move to Jerusalem. And for the past 22 years, every 6 months, the president has signed a waiver to delay this. And what Donald Trump did on Wednesday was he said, he did sign the waiver, and he's saying, but we have a plan to move the embassy to Jerusalem once we get basically all the logistics worked out.
Right.
But I'm going to do something that has never happened before. I'm going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So what is this, and why is he doing this? So this was a push from major donors such as Christian evangelical organizations,
right,
Sheldon Adelson, and other members of Jewish establishment, and from the Israeli government themselves. And so Jerusalem is, in Israel's mind, is its capital, but no country has their embassy in Jerusalem. And the reason this is that because Jerusalem is a really contentious issue for achieving any sort of peace agreement in the region, because this is a really important city and place to both Israelis and Palestinians. And all countries know that this is going to, one, be if you know anyone who knows anything about this issue would say this is obviously an act of incitement, and there's going to be violence in the region because of this decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a major slap in the face to Palestinians to say we do not recognize your connection to the city, a city that is not only holy to Jews but also to Muslims and Christians. And this is also further cementing the occupation and land takeover of East Jerusalem. And even people who talk about the occupation often really focus on the West Bank, and Jerusalem is really forgotten about. And Jerusalem is Palestinian families are being kicked out of their homes in an increase of numbers, and it's just something we're not talking about. And this really further cements this land takeover by Israel of Palestinian land.
Let's talk a little bit, too, about the history of If Not Now. Tell us about the founding and the work that you've done as an organization over the past couple of years.
Yeah, so If Not Now was founded in 2014 during Operation Protective Edge, which was a major war on Gaza. And what our community was seeing was that the establishment of Jewish organizations were overwhelmingly supporting Israel at all costs during this war, a war that killed over 2,000 Palestinians, including over 500 children. And we saw that, you know, our establishment of our community was not siding with the values that we grew up with. And so a group of young Jews in New York City decided to hold actions reciting the Morris Kaddish, which is a prayer for the dead in Jewish tradition. And what we saw in that moment was actually major resonance across the country of young Jews to be like, yeah, I'm also really upset with my community's response to this. And so it kind of naturally spread across the country, and cities all over were doing these mortar Scottish actions. And then the war ended, and obviously the siege on Gaza did not end. And what we saw was there was actually a major void we were filling by really targeting the American Jewish community and saying, hey, we deeply care about the Jewish community, but we cannot support a community and be a part of a community that supports endless occupation. And so we paused for a year, about 15 to 20 people that I was a part of, and came up with a long-term strategy for the movement and relaunched in December 2015. And this, we take a direct action approach and also community building and do a lot of training to kind of get people on board with the strategy and be able to enact it themselves. And we, you know, in December 2015 started these trainings to really relaunch our movement. And after Trump was elected, you know, this was a time where people really wanted to act politically. And when Steve Bannon was announced as the chief strategist of the Trump administration, what we saw was our community, the South Shore community, not saying, hey, this is really messed up, even though this is a known white supremacist. And that's because the our community, it's gone overboard with our pro-Israel at all cost politics. And so we launched a series of actions using the Fire Bannon hashtag to say, hey, our community needs to oppose this nomination of Bannon and needs to actually side with, like, side with Jews. Like, why would we as a Jewish community be supporting someone who is an anti-Semite? It makes no sense at all. And what we saw was, in this moment, our membership actually tripled because there was just such a void for Jewish organizations taking action on this. And IFFNOT NOW was not the only one by any means. But what we saw was the establishment really not siding on the right side of history.
Yeah, and we've seen that continue this year with Bannon, with Sebastian Gorka, with other people who have histories of anti-Semitism who are really, you know, I mean, on the one hand, part of this administration, which is already bad for all people, really, but, and then on the other hand, people who, not just to talk about Netanyahu, but to talk about right-wing Jewish organizations that embrace people like this. And so we've been in this moment now for about a year. For a long time, criticism of Israel has been associated with, or been accused of, rather, being anti-Semitic. And so I wonder if you could talk about this, like, really tangled moment we're in terms of anti-Semitism and the politics of Israel.
It's pretty wild. I think a pretty frequent question that's been asked is, wait, can someone be supportive of Israel and still be an anti-Semite? And the answer is yes. And we've seen that. And, you know, it's, the reason for this is there's a lot of different layers. You know, I think it's important for us to note that the U.S. government, and we see this with the Jerusalem move, the embassy move, the U.S. government has its own political reasons for supporting the occupation. And we as Jews need to say we're not your pawns for doing this. And, you know, Christian evangelical organizations that our community, for the most part, would totally not align with in situations where they're supporting Israel, you know, give them our support. And there have been synagogues. There was a synagogue in California recently that hosted an event with the head of the Christians United for Israel, which is the biggest lobbying, pro-Israel lobbying group. And this is an organization that, you know, the idea behind supporting Israel is so that, you know, the rapture will come. And that's not a good situation for Jews. So this is not a law for Jews, but we're seeing a conflation of you know, supporting Israel at all costs with saying they side with Jews, and that's not actually true. And this is also very connected to Islamophobia as well.
Yeah, can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing here is that Israel is seen as a Western country in this region, and in a lot of these, like, especially with these Christian evangelical organizations, it's a anti-Muslim effort to say, hey, we support Israel, we support Jews, and we don't support the Arabs in the region.
Talk a little bit about then about using a direct action approach as well as the organizing that you've been doing in the community. What are some of the actions that you've taken? What are some of the successes that you've had, both in terms of organizing people and getting people to understand where you're coming from, and also maybe some actions that had results?
Why direct action? We believe that this is a crisis and that we need to raise attention on it. And also, I mean, a lot of the approach that we use is that we're actually working to transform the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is we deeply care about it. And so our actions are almost always rooted in Jewish ritual and really are demonstrating ourselves to the Jewish movement with the goal of transforming our community and not having our community be one that supports occupation. And some successes is, well, Bannon is no longer the chief strategist, and we were really able to push that narrative that, you know, Steve Bannon is a danger for all people in our country and Jews too. So that's been a major victory. And I think we had it was the largest ever protest outside of the APAC, or Jewish protest outside of the APAC conference last spring. And this was a major thing where we had 1,000 people there protesting APAC saying, hey, we have a different future in mind for the Jewish community, and it's not one that supports endless occupation, and that we're going to demonstrate to our community that, you know, we deeply care about it, but our community is in need for a redirection right now, and we are going to help lead that redirection.
Yeah. And so moving forward from this moment, what are next steps around this? If Trump did sign the 6-month waiver, what are the plans to put pressure on this to make them not do this thing? And to further, I guess, you know, challenge this narrative.
So I think we're also figuring out what is the best approach for this. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this waiver has not been signed. So there is, you know, we do have work to do over the next 6 months. A lot of it is that this is actually an issue that people don't really understand. Mm-hmm. There actually needs to be a lot of education around this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the violence in the region has already started. You know, I don't even know if I have the latest statistics, but 2 Palestinians in Gaza have died. And then there have been over 700 Palestinians who have been severely wounded, including over 60 by live ammunition. And so what we're seeing is an increase in violence and repression already. Mm-hmm. So we need to get the message out there that this is a condition that is going to lead to violence and unsafety for Palestinians especially, and also Israelis too. And our community cannot support that. And we also have to call out politicians who are supporting this too. Mm-hmm. Chuck Schumer mm-hmm. was actually someone who really encouraged Donald Trump to push this forward. And, you know, in a time where actually people are really focused on this electoral politics, when we're seeing Democrats so openly side with the president, we have to ask ourselves, what is the reason for this? And it's really unacceptable.
Great. So how can people keep in touch with you, keep up with If Not Now, and join if they're interested?
Yeah, so you should go to ifnotnowmovement.org, our website, and you can sign up there to see what actions are coming up next, as well as signing up for trainings, which give you an in-depth look at our long-term strategy. And we are, you know, I'm praying that violence does not intensify, and I'm not hopeful for that. And so we're going to be out in the street demonstrating that Jews do not universally support this decision. In fact, the AJC released a poll that 80% of Jews do not support an embassy move.
Wow.
So one thing that's really important for us to do is to actually show, like, the numbers are not on the side of our community supporting the embassy move. Mm-hmm. So it's really important we make our voices heard so that that is not conflated. And so joining us in the streets is our first ask, and getting to a training and supporting us. If you want to make a donation, that's wonderful. And you can find us on Facebook or on our website.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.